I'm Hamish McRae, and I'm the chief economic commentator for The Independent and The Independent on Sunday.
Excellent. So you were talking about some lessons from cities around the world, and one of them that you were talking about was Copenhagen, which I believe about 30 years ago you were saying started to transition the center of downtown from to cars-free zone. Now, you were talking about sort of a mix of incentives or how they did that, and it wasn't just that they banned cars from the center of the city. So how were they able to transform the center of the city into this kind of a car-free zone?
Well, you can always just ban cars. But what the really clever thing about Copenhagen, and they pioneered it, is that they very gradually started making very small changes to traffic flow patterns. They would clear cars out of one street, and they would make sure there was appropriate parking nearby. And then they would look at the fine detail of that street, what the shops were, what the urban furniture was, and they would nudge it so that it would become a bit of a mecca for shoppers. And then as they did that, they'd find that footfall would surge, the number of people going up and down the street would rise. So shops did better. So restaurants did better. So people sat out in coffee tables in the street. And that further helped it. And then shops were redesigned so that they would have open shop fronts and not have shutters pulled down. And so the whole area just became a little nicer. And then when that happened, the next street would say, well, wait a minute, what about us? These people have done very well. Could we not perhaps? And so that moved on so that you gradually extended over a very large pedestrian area. And the effect is that the centre of Copenhagen has become almost a sort of centre of fun, arts, entertainment, life. And the joke is they've managed to extend the summer of this northern city, it's a city on the same latitude as Glasgow, to 9 months. So they only have 3 months winter.
So it was more about playing with the benefits and also looking quite carefully at how the changes in moving cars out of there were affecting the city.
And how you then nudge more people to commute by bike. I'll give you one statistic. More people in Copenhagen now commute by bike than by car. 35% against 31%, as a matter of fact. So, and that is much, much higher than it was even 20 years ago. So radical change taking place in all sorts of ways to make a city go back much more to what a medieval city was hundreds of years ago, and one that therefore works much better.
You also, in speaking today, talked a little bit about lessons that, European cities and North American cities, the developed world, just to say, can learn from cities in the developing world. Now, one of them was Shanghai. Mm. And you talked about how it had integrated trade more effectively into the city.
I think what Shanghai has done, and if you've been there, anyone who's been there will be just wowed by it. If you look across the river, the Hangpo River, to Pudong. What was 25 years ago just rice paddy fields is now this great shining metropolis of a new city. It's like, for Britain's Canary Wharf, five times over, built in a shorter period. And it has been transformed. But that's just one example of one of the things, the biggest single thing that Shanghai has done. But it also has actually worked very hard at improving its artistic life, its opera house. It's also worked very hard at urban links. It has a maglev train coming in from the airport. Sometimes makes mistakes, by the way. The maglev train stops in the suburbs, and actually they've had to send the normal subway system out to the airport anyway. So, I don't think we should ever claim that what a city does is perfect. There always are mistakes, and Shanghai has made quite a few. Indeed, I think Copenhagen has made quite a few mistakes, including the Bella Center, this new conference center that had the climate change, which is a bit of a catastrophe. Okay. So I don't think we should ever
hold there's no on. One answer.
I don't, and I think that people who hunt for the magic bullet, you know, that will suddenly transform everything, change everything, that's not the way the world works. What we have to do is take what we've got, improve it a little, incrementally. I think there is scope, particularly in infrastructure, for bold vision. Put the infrastructure in first, and then the development will follow. But I do think that, as a general rule, incremental change is safer than radical change.
Now, the last example you gave was in Mumbai. And basically, listening to it, the lesson that I took away is it doesn't have to look good to work.
Mumbai is fascinating. This is a city of 18 million people, India's largest city, its richest city, bursting upwards with growth, but hugely congested, partly because of its design, a long peninsula with, like Manhattan, but with inadequate links to the rest of the mainland. But now within that city, however, there is a city, it's called Dharavi, it is, we use the word, horrid word, slum. It is actually Asia's second largest slum. And it is, I much prefer to see, think of it as an informal city. 750,000, maybe 1 million people in an area which is full of shacks, one and two-story shacks. But it looks terrible. If you, however, look at the lives that people have within it, it doesn't look nice, but it's not too bad. Everybody is reasonably well fed, much better fed than they were in the villages in the land from which they came in. I was told the great thing about Dharavi is no one goes hungry to bed at night. Children are educated there. There's a network of schools, some Muslim schools, some small primary schools. I went to one primary school where what happens is an ordinary family clears away all its belongings and its living room, its whole apartment, I suppose you'd say, becomes a school for the morning. Children come in, sit around cross-legged on the floor and learn. And getting, you know, training incidentally in English, because English is the key to getting out, and that's what the parents demand. There's healthcare, there's a very good municipal hospital on the edge, and there are also doctors within the community. And everybody has a job, a big recycling operation, big metal bashing operation. And I think it's very important when planning cities to look at the communities that exist there and be very careful that whatever you do does not disrupt those communities. And also when you plan a new city, that you leave space for people to develop it in their own way. So some top down, but when in doubt, less top down and more bottom up.
So the day here of talking about sustainable cities started off with a call to shift from debate and discussion to action. Thinking about the cities that you've just talked about, in the city that we're in, London, how do you think that those cities provide some lessons about steps that London can take for action?
Well, I think London has some advantages and some disadvantages. It has the advantage that, very important if you remember, it has a huge amount of green space. And that creates an urban environment which is very attractive at its best. And the best parts of London, I think, do offer a terrific quality of life for their people. I think one of the specific issues is that, and this has emerged during the course of the day, I mean, we do need to be very careful about our infrastructure and not chase too far along behind demand. And infrastructure costs money, and that has to be maintained. And there have been big improvements made, but if you look at the Shanghai subway network, and the quality of that, well, it's less extensive, of course, it's brand new, but look at the quality of that. I think there's certainly a lot of things we can learn from that. And of course, a little wrinkle on that is that we have our Oyster cards were, of course, adapted from Hong Kong, a Chinese city. So that's one example of something we have already learned. I think there's much more. I think from Copenhagen, we can learn more about smaller communities where we can actually work to exclude the car, but not in any sort of cack-handed radical way. You can do things in a medieval core that you can't do in a bustling working city. And I think the other thing that we really need to think about in London very carefully is the outer boroughs. A lot of us have been going on in the centre, but I think the outer boroughs need attention and need a bit of tender loving care.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.